you started really fighting for women at a time when many were emerging into the workforce, many working moms, single moms. How have things changed that you've watched evolve through all these decades?
Obviously, women have flooded into the paid labor force, and that has not been accommodated in, for instance, childcare. I mean, other countries are far better than we are about having national systems of childcare. So there is a lot of stress on women and men who want to be parents and also to work, you know. So we have a lot of change to make in order to catch up with other countries.
What are some of the difficult challenges that you see all of us facing today, right now?
There are two kind of root problems. One is violence against females, because the rate of domestic violence, family violence, is huge. Actually, if you add up all the women who have been murdered by their husbands or boyfriends since 9/11, and then add up everybody who was killed in 9/11 and in Iraq and in Afghanistan, more women have been killed by their husbands and boyfriends.
That's a frightening statistic.
Yeah, and it's important that we say that, because it is the result of the extreme masculine-feminine roles that tell men, and men get born into this, you know, some men get born into this, that they're supposed to, they have a right to be, to dominate and to possess other female people and so on. Obviously, most men don't do that, but there's about a third who do get addicted to the masculine role and to control and dominance, and we need to look at that, to really look at it, because at its extreme, it turns into violence at home and to violence against other men and also to terrorism. That's a challenge that we need to constantly bring up. And also, we need to understand that parents are parents, men as well as women, and that it's in the national interest, you know, certainly, to have children and to raise them well. So we really need to stop being almost the only modern democracy without a national system of child care and without family-friendly work policies. And we need to stop blaming women by saying, it's your fault if you can't have it all. Nobody can have it all in this structure. We need to change the structure.
Have you heard about Governor Andrew Cuomo's Equality Act that he's pushing for? Do you think it goes far enough?
It's great to have it all in one place. I think it's very helpful, because it goes all the way from equal pay to sex trafficking. So, I think there are some there's some fine tuning that we need, because laws have grown up at different times and are sometimes inconsistent, you know, with each other. I mean, the way that prostituted women and children are treated is, you know, if a man has sex with a 12-year-old, it's one set of laws, and if he pays that 12-year-old $50, it's another set of laws. So we need to rationalize the laws, but I think it's a great start and a great impulse.
He did announce today that he doesn't seem to have enough Senate votes on the reproductive health of abortions, which talks to the topic of late-term abortions. Do you think that that's something that's not going to happen in New York State?
It will happen if we go with the majority view, because the majority believes that it's up to a woman and her physician to make that decision. And obviously, late-term abortions are not even 1% of all. It's very rare and very tragic when it happens, because it usually means that there is something that's gone terribly wrong at, you know, say, a fetus that has no brain tissue, or, you know, and it's important for the health of the mother, the woman, and often to preserve her fertility, you know, that she be able to have a late-term abortion.
On the same day that you're celebrating this event with Planned Parenthood, the 80th anniversary, we learned that the FDA has approved Plan B over-the-counter sale of the morning-after pill to those 15 and up. Is that a victory for Planned Parenthood?
It's a victory for simple democracy and control of your own body. I mean, if you're old enough to get pregnant, you're old enough to get unpregnant. And I thought the judge's opinion was a model of really doing research on the way the pill worked. You know, I would like to say thank you to that judge because it really served the cause of a simple justice, you know, that we are in control of our own bodies.
But what about the concerns of a 15-year-old not taking precautions and being careful about sexually transmitted diseases? And, of course, the messages that are taught through Planned Parenthood, along with this, that's available over the counter. Mm-hmm. What are those concerns that you have?
You know, we need to be educated about sexually transmitted diseases, obviously. We need to have real sex education in the schools. And the adversary there, you know, has been historically right-wing folks in Washington who tried to restrict funds for sex education unless it was abstinence only, for instance, which, you know, it's the only instance I can think of in which a school rewards you for lack of knowledge. Makes no sense. And again, we're the only modern democracy that I know of that doesn't just normally include sex education as part of all education.
So the responsibility needs to come back to those districts, those school districts, to help promote it.
Well, and not just the school districts, but the Department of Education, our system of subsidizing education. During both Bush administrations, there was every effort to withhold federal funds from sex education that taught other than abstinence.
Since we're on the topic of teens, when you look at a teenager today, average teen, what powers does she hold as a female that perhaps you didn't have at her age? Mm.
I hope that she can envision a full life for herself and using all of her talents. I probably thought that until I was 9 or 10, and then the kind of feminine role comes down upon you at 11 or 12, and you've come to believe that you have to behave in a certain way, not be too ambitious, not know too much, you know, because it's not feminine. And I hope that she just doesn't believe that.
Do you think she knows what you fought for?
I don't know, but I care much more that she keeps on fighting. Because gratitude never radicalized anybody. You know, I didn't walk around saying thank you for the vote. I got mad because I was being treated unfairly. I care much more that she keeps moving forward.
Do you see younger women in the movement now that are taking on what you have done in the next levels to come?
Oh, yes. No, there are many more of them. I mean, actually, as we see by the polls after the last election, the exit polls, young women are more likely to call themselves feminists and to support feminist issues than older women are. And women of color are more likely than white women are. And it's more than half in both cases. And incidentally, it's 30% of men, too.
What is your message to young women to fight for what is next in our journey?
My message is, let me help you do what you want to do. You know, it doesn't help to, you don't develop a will from being told what to do. So my message is one of support.
Can you talk about some of your toughest critics? Can you talk about some of them?
Some of them I'm really honored to have. I mean, I'm very, very honored that Rush Limbaugh calls me a feminazi. And, is, you know, if he liked me, I think I was doing, where did I go wrong, you know, that he actually approved of me. It's much more painful when you are, if I really make a mistake, I'm very glad to have somebody correct me because that's the way we grow. But the most painful thing is to be misunderstood, you know, that by people who are sharing the same goals. That's hard.
You are 79 years old. You're beautiful. How do you keep the energy level up? How do you take care of yourself? And what's your advice to women in the aging process?
You know, I'm not a great example. I don't exercise that much except running through airports. I love ice cream and I'm addicted to sugar and so on. if I have any advantage, it's that I'm doing what I love. And without trying to be critical of women who have facelifts and plastic surgery, I hope to be an example of the fact that you don't have to. You know, I'm grateful for George O'Keefe, for instance. I think George O'Keefe never would have had a facelift. So I hope I can play that role just as an option.
Gloria Steinem, thank you so much.
Thank you.